This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey everyone, and welcome to RPG from Scratch. I'm your host, Josh LaForge, and with me today is Doug.
Hello.
And Max.
Also here.
Liam couldn't make it today. This is probably going to be a bonus episode because we're going to talk about a current event. Wizards of the Coast and their parent company Hasbro has announced and has leaked that there's going to be some changes to the open gaming license that they use for people to publish modules and derivative works and stuff like that. And the rumor is, they haven't come out officially with all the language as of this recording, but the rumor is that they're going to change it, and their motivation is that they would like to monetize more of their business and get everybody on the same platform. So if you want to publish things with Wizards of the Coast, you're probably going to be able to, but you're going to be have to use their channels. You can't use independent ones, and you have to consult them, and they'll probably be able to refuse you. But Doug, you said that Luke posted something or showed the meeting notes, the leaked ones.
Yeah, there were some audio clips of like their meeting, like one of their quarterly meetings or whatever, and their plan for moving forward, and it was all from the perspective of this one. I don't want to give the wrong idea, but like it was someone whose job was to pitch things to executives and explain this is what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Oh, yeah. So we're talking about a shareholder's call.
Yeah, it was like, okay, a shareholder's call. And it was a lot of fluff, as you could imagine, of just like, well, D&D's the leader and the blah, 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 blah. The little bit of insights that you got from it wasn't nothing about the open gaming license. They just said they were going to be pursuing new opportunities,
right,
and how we're going to expand this and it's going to make more money than ever. And oh my gosh, we're going to be doing so great. You won't even believe how much we're winning. We're going to be winning so much you're going to get tired of winning. You know, like that kind
same
of shit.
Same old story.
Yeah, but the OGL news in light of that definitely adds a tone.
Yeah, if only we had spent like the better part of a decade writing our own game from scratch.
Right. Yeah. The ultimate point being is that these are decisions being made at super high levels by people who don't play the game and just see it as like, oh, it's like Monopoly. Okay. Oh, wait, people want to make their own Monopoly boards? Well, yeah, we should own that. You know, it's the same thought process.
It sounds like they want to move to that pure digital platform as well, so that everything is
low overhead.
But also like, everything is transactional.
Yeah.
Like you can keep track of everything. You have better numbers on everything.
Yeah.
And you can monetize every portion
every
of it.
Portion.
Yeah. One of the
you want to unlock a new class? Here, you don't have to buy the whole book. Pay us $5.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one of the things on the call that they were bragging about. Of course, this is to high-level people who don't know what they're talking about. But then one of the bragging points was, oh, well, because of the online structure that we already have in place, the people playing D&D mm-hmm. through whatever it is, like D&D Beyond, they have this is like one of the largest collections of data and how people play these games. And I'm like, no, you have the largest collection of data about people who play D&D Beyond. Has nothing to do with people at the table.
Anything else.
You know,
selection bias, for sure.
Yeah, or other types of games or anything.
No, it's probably the largest largest repository of data of that kind.
Sure.
Right. There's nothing comparable.
My email is the largest repository of Doug Banks' email.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
You know, it's the
same. What I mean is it's not useless, but it's not it's you're
extremely niche.
You're not just not being able to see the forest for the trees. It's like you're looking at a grove and you think it's the planet.
Yeah.
But I've had my email since Gmail started and I never deleted an email.
Yeah.
You're insane.
Yeah. I've never once deleted an email.
I'm the same way. I just archive them.
Yeah.
Get them off the main.
But, like, it just makes me laugh. Like, can you imagine, like, sitting around your table and your GM's like, all right, before we go in the dungeon, I just want to take a minute to talk to you about better health. You know, you can just call this number. Like, what are they going for? Product placement? Like,
I don't know if it's going to go that far.
They really want it. It's like, oh, we just built these premium tools. If you want access to those to bring your game to the next level, D&D Beyond has them for this, and it's a subscription fee. So if you always want the new ones, or if you want the access to them at all,
and they take a little off the top if you decide to publish something.
They made the best tool ever with 3.5, right? Wasn't that when they had the character creator they sent out?
That was 4.
That was 4?
4 had the best character
creator. That was a great tool.
It was awesome.
But then they, you know, make that and sell that.
People for anybody listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, when Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition came out, D&D Beyond had a character tool that was free to download, and then you would pay for like the updates to the books and stuff like that, but you could still make characters, and it worked really well, but it was a local, it was local to your computer. It wasn't something you had to access the internet every time you wanted to use.
And we would just make characters for fun.
Oh, yeah, we made tons.
Like, what does this do?
Yeah.
It's like, do these things stack? Oh, shit, they do. Yeah, that was really fun. But, you know, obviously they saw that people were sharing all of the updates on sites that they didn't approve of. And, you know, I understand them revoking it. The reason why we bring this up is we don't have anything to do with the OGL, right? We don't. There's no benefit for us, or there's nothing we're losing by the OGL. However, the outcry about how this affects the community is more than just an opportunity for RPG from scratch. It's like we are a symptom. Like, our whole podcast is a symptom of people's general reluctance to engage with Hasbro's marketing plans, right? Like, that's why we broke off and made this in the first place. It was just less convenient to play Dungeons & Dragons for a number of reasons. And it was just doing things that we didn't want. We wanted to change them. I was looking at everything that we have available to us, and this is a community. I mean, we build the RPG in the room, but with lots of integrated community feedback. I know I've been a broken record about this, but the wiki will be up soon. I'll be publishing. I'm going to try to upload it to Git as well. So if people care about seeing what was changed and when, they'll have an ongoing log. And if they want to fork it and move to something else, like I want to make sure that we're using the right license so that they feel empowered to do so.
Yeah.
And that if the thing I currently want, and I want your guys' feedback on this as well, is a way to do whatever license we pick. I want one that allows anybody to do whatever they want, including making their own stuff and selling it for a profit, as long as we get proper attribution. In terms of, like, this is the scratch dice system, this was taken from this place, and it's got a way for the reader in a prominent place for them to access the origin thing. Not because we want to distract from the thing that somebody made, but just so that if other people get a wild hair up their ass, they have the same access to the same resources we created.
Make the game you want to play.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Now, currently, I'm only talking about the scratch dice system because, like, there's a lot more weird, vague areas when it comes to, if we were to say, I just released The Spill for free, so people just play it, and I don't really know, like, what's an appropriate license for that. Whereas we have a roadmap,
right?
Frankly, from what Paizo and Wizards of the Coast have done before us. And I feel like this will be the one that people need the most access to and the most freedom to do a spin on.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going to prioritize that. Also, as part of the news, every other gaming company that has relied on the OGL has made a statement about them doing something on their own now. Like, Kobold Press is going to create a core system. They're going to start working on a core RPG system. Matt Colville, who makes excellent YouTube videos, check out Matt Colville on YouTube if you get a chance. He's going to start work on a gaming system as well. And while I'm excited to see what they make, boys, I think we got a leg up on them. I think we could get something ready for people to just... They don't have to wait for a book to be published. They don't need to wait for any of that. As soon as the wiki is up, we're going to have the most intuitive and hopefully best written quick start guide so that you can get a game started immediately with your friends.
And pretty developed, too. Like, I mean, if you're starting now, that's going to be a tough road.
Yeah. Well, but also, if you start with ours and, like, oh, there was some that have step 10 and some don't, well, you know, maybe...
What would you think would be a good one?
Yeah, what do you think's good? Like, you know, shoot comments at us on Discord or Patreon.
I feel like we can meet them halfway, like... What if we, for like $3, you can add a D6 to your roll?
It's the wrong line of thinking.
Oh, God. Some shareholder just started drooling. Yeah. The Koch brothers are like, how do we get into nerddom?
99 cents per momentum.
$1 per D. It's like, yeah. What? It's like, $1 per D. You can get one D for $1. Like, I don't think you understand what we're talking about.
How come you don't use the D32? Just leave money on the tabletop, boys.
We all invent right. The D1000.
Dum, dum, dum. It's a bowling ball.
Oh, God. I'm interested in, I'm pretty sure it was, but I have to
it's
make
just
sure.
It's so interesting watching, because they're like Critical Role and see, Dimension 20 and everything. They see that and they're like, oh, we can, it's like, that's the opposite you should be thinking. Like, you should be enjoying
that. I don't think Critical Role does think positive about it. I think
no, I'm saying Hasbro should be like, they shouldn't look at that as money.
And oh, right, like, right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's advertising.
That's yeah, free. Dude,
they're doing
Critical Role has done more for D&D than absolutely. Anybody in history.
I love Brendan Lee Mulligan on Dimension 20. I think he's one of the best GMs.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a guy, he's on the Glass Cannon podcast. He is a crew member now, but he ran a Blades in the Dark campaign. I think it's only accessible through their Patreon, but it was done with a second podcast. I don't remember what the name is. If anybody's looking for an excellent, excellent lesson on like complicated but loose GMing, this guy is incredible. I'll find his name.
I can't remember the name of the video, but Matt Quoville did do a video in the past few months talking about D&D and like what is it nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
And in a nutshell, D&D is just a set of rules and it's not a game anymore because Call of Cthulhu, the mechanics inform the story. Sanity points, you know, the horror of it. Even Star Wars Fantasy Flight, it's very swashbuckly. Like, it's in the mechanics of the game. D&D, people run horror in D&D, but there's no mechanic focused on that. People run adventure. Nah, I mean, it's really like, here's a list of tools, here's a list of spells, and just, whatever. You know, and that might feel like a huge sandbox for you to play in, but there really is no emphasis on genre. Like, it's just a monster slaying game, and it's the onus is on the GM to invent the genre, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But compared to other modern games that come out that have a very specific direction they're going in or a mood they're going for, pairing it like that, it was kind of, I hadn't thought of it in those terms before, and it made me kind of not rethink, but realize why D&D felt boring to me, and why something like.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what we're doing in RPG from scratch is like, okay, no, we're making an adventure game about a party of people. How does the party work together? How does what you do inform what I do and how we communicate and how, you know, brownie points and this and this and this. Well, you know, you're not brownie anymore, but, you know, trying to encourage that teamwork mentality that was very tactile in nature in 4th edition, but here it's wheeling and dealing. It's just, and
how many times have we seen this? Like, we have to capitalize it and then they just crash it. That's not how it works.
Yeah. It's become watered down. And in fact, the thing that Matt Koval was saying was in the 5th edition's, like, you know, rulebook, it's like, here's what an adventures kit has, and it has things like a 20-foot pole. You know, it's just like, well, most people would be like, why the fuck do I need a 20-foot pole? And he goes, but if you play, you know, the original back in the day, it was super important you had that.
I tried to have the 10-foot pole when we played...
10-foot pole, yeah. Dungeon Crawl Classics?
Dungeon Crawl Classics, which we'll be releasing for patrons.
And the thing is, the 10-foot pole... Great idea, great tool, save us.
Unless Max is in your party and you're like, I could push the door open with a 10-foot pole. Max is like, don't worry about it.
Yep.
Nobody cared about the 10-foot pole but me.
It's like, immediately, it's like, now do you see? You see why the 10-foot pole is necessary?
We brought it, we're using it.
But yeah, like 10-foot pole, 20-foot rope, whatever, all these things that they do not explain in the core rulebook. It's just like, hey, here's a list of junk. But for those who've played the older editions going into it, you know what that is. It's almost like a Marvel movie. Where it's like going into it, like they'll say something or show something, be like, "Oh, I'm Skippy McDee," and you're like, "Oh shit!" In the '60s, he bumped into the Fantastic Four, and that led to this. And but if you're just fresh to it, you go, "Okay, cool. I'll see where this goes."
Yeah, when you hear people like gasp in a movie theater and I have no idea what's going on, that happened to me in Solo, a Star Wars story.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Mario Van Peebles movie.
Oh no, that
I gasped all the time. Well, what do you mean? Was it at the end?
Yeah, when those, well, not the end, but like when those people started taking off their helmets and everyone was like, oh, and I was like,
what?
I got nothing. What? I'm sorry.
Even I'm...
They were major Clone Wars figures, I guess.
The
crappy cartoon that I can't watch.
You're about to make some enemies on the Discord.
It's the cartoon style.
Listen, if they're this far into the podcast or listen to a bonus episode, they know you're a troll. So I found it. Jared Logan is the name of the GM who GMs the Blades in the Dark campaign. Anything you can find with this guy GMing, I think especially recently, amazing. I think in terms of he's not as theatrical as Brendan Lee Mulligan or Matt Mercer or I'm sure Matt Coville.
Yeah.
But the dude knows what he's talking about and is one of the most immediately flexible and yes and GMs I think I've ever listened to. Very, very cool. Very professional. Stuff with the OGL, not a lot is confirmed. You know, we don't really know what direction Hasbro's going to go.
And is anything,
they may check it out.
Well, I was going to say, and we don't care.
No.
Frankly, except in the way that it points to the uproar around the implication,
yeah,
points to what we're doing, and we should take it seriously, and we should address those kind of things right out of the gate, because
we care because it affects good people. But
yeah,
but the big part of me still is just, come on, I want you to do it. I want you to do it.
But does anything leak really? Does anything really leak anymore?
Yeah, like, no, sure.
This is them feeling out to see what the reaction is going to be.
Meeting notes at a shareholders meeting are not confidential. You know, like it's not. Mm-hmm. It's a leak in the sense that like they probably didn't want you to listen in. You know? Yeah. But if you own shares, like, yeah. I would say the focus I want here is that right now I'm leaning towards a Creative Commons license for what we're doing to what we'll probably license. And this is a probably. I'm just pointing it out there.
Sure.
I'm probably going to talk to a lawyer as well.
Probably.
I would like something that allows people to make their own stuff based on ours that they are allowed to make money on, so long as we are credited in a prominent way that allows other people the same opportunity to do the same.
One thing that comes to mind, because I don't know a lot about the different types of Creative Commons stuff that's out there, but when it comes to like...
There are many different...
No, sure, concepts. I know. Yeah, and I don't know much about any of them. But when I'm thinking in terms of like, we've made a tool set, you can go forward and make something. One thing that comes to mind, at least first, is like the type of license you get with Unreal Engine, where like you put it out and say, hey...
And they take 5%?
Well, only after you make a certain amount of money. At first, it's like you could, like, literally, we could all download Unreal Engine tonight, make a game completely for free. All we have to do is just make it say the logo in the beginning that says made in Unreal Engine, and we don't owe them a dime until it crosses a set number of money, which is like a lot.
I think it's like 50K or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm less interested in setting a threshold because. If Paizo or Kobold Press was like, oh, we'll publish a module in your system, like,
yeah,
you know, and we're like, you can't make too much money on it,
or else
we take
No, and that's not the part I was trying to put the emphasis on, but just rather that, like,
it is, I do agree that I think is a very fair license for what they're doing. I think that the Unreal Game Engine and especially UE5 looks amazing. Like, they need to be paid for what they've done.
Yeah.
But I think that the framework that we're providing is far less of somebody who wants to write a story as a campaign can pick whatever system they want and make it in a way UE5 probably has stuff that nobody else has.
Oh, sure.
And in ways that, like, trying to rip it off would just involve, like, thousands of hours of work. So
But the idea that we were making a tool set.
From what I understand, you can't really... In terms of mechanics are hard to copyright, except for now there's like vagaries around this. I'm not concerned about that. Take whatever you want. Use Momentum in D&D. I don't care. Use it in your home games. Try everything out. What I would like to include as part of the IP and the copyright and stuff like that is the base setting of our game with the races and the paths that we've made, which I think are fully copyrightable, but I want them to be included as what you are absolutely allowed to take to whatever system you want or whatever adventure you want. I don't know how I feel about the pre-con characters. I think maybe we should retain ownership of those so that the stories that they come out in are related to us.
Yeah.
You know, in our things.
Just
like,
just so that someone can't make a spin-off adventure about, you know, one of the characters.
Abutos,
you
know, is now Alligator Hitler or something.
Right.
Like, I just don't, I think
Because that would lead to confusion. That would be, you know.
Right. I think we could say the base history of the world you can take, you can use whatever you want, you can use a timeline.
Like, if someone wants to do their Shadowrun version of Artifacts,
yeah,
they can do that, but they can't take Abutos and make it to the, you know... Like you said, it's a whole. We're gonna write a book about him.
Or
do this.
I mean, you know what? I don't know though. Like, I don't know if I actually do care, or if I'm like, I guess maybe you could put a clause in there where you're like, hey, so long as you credit that this is not like
official,
that this is like your like the Kobold version of the can, you know, like if Kobold Press were to do something or something like that. This is Kobold Press is making their own game system. They're probably not interested. I'm just just throwing that out there. But you know what? I don't have my mind made up about that. It was just it's a side thought. I don't think it's that important, but I want to put it out there to the community. If there's anything that you wish that you could do or make or anything using our system that you think a license would restrict or allow for, I don't know, shout at us.
Yeah.
Find us on the Omniverse Discord. Find us on
Let me know
Patreon.
If you want a book about Kelton.
What if they write a book about Kelton?
I'll write the book about Kelton.
Ah, see, that's the question, right? Like, that's the thing.
I mean, I wrote it, but, you know.
I think everybody owns their own characters, right? If it's a character you made, you own your character.
Yeah.
I mean, that's similar to basic copyright law,
yeah.
Right? Like, you can write a derivative work. Let's say you write your own Star Wars story, right? And the way copyright is currently written, you own that. You own that Star Wars story.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sell it without the permission of George of Lucas
now,
or whatever,
yeah.
Right? There's copyright covers distribution, but no, you own it. Star Wars can't steal that from you. They can't use it for themselves. It's yours. However, I don't know, man. I don't know how I want to do it. The Creative Commons is looking by far the most attractive. The things that worry me about Creative Commons, I think they've already covered with different versions of their licenses. The Creative Commons license is modular. So, for instance, you could restrict a license so that if we release something for free, they can make whatever they want, but they also have to release it for free.
Right.
I don't like that one.
Right.
I think that I would like people to be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah. If they put in the work for it, then
yeah.
You know.
Just make it clear.
Great.
That we didn't make it, but it is derivative. You need to make sure that people know it's derivative.
I think moving forward, when things start to get more serious, we'll only be more concerned with whatever licensing thing that we do. Will be more about proving what we're not making instead of, like,
yes,
protecting what we got.
Yeah, I believe the attribution-only version of Creative Commons covers that. But before
you've
I make
gotta,
the final decision,
yeah, definitely
I've got to get it. I've got to get further into it. But listeners, I am positive many of you have a lot of feelings about the changes to the OGL.
No doubt.
And many of you have been playing Dungeons & Dragons every edition as long as you can remember.
Pro Hasbro people, speak out. We want to hear you.
Yeah.
Who supports this? Who's down?
Well,
what part of
somebody.
The D&D community is supporting this?
I'll sure tell you as a Magic the Gathering player.
Yes.
I'm very frustrated at Hasbro lately, and I don't care what they think on that front anymore. I play Commander, so I don't really have to care what they think. Well, that's where we're going to end it today. Please, if you have any concerns or you have things you wish that would be allowed with whatever you're currently playing and is not, reach out to us. Let us know. I'm really interested in this topic because while I don't see it as a particularly big deal regarding us and what we want, that doesn't mean it isn't one. You know, I mean, a lot of people may care way more about it. And I think that's until about a week ago, it didn't seem like there was a reasonable reason to be worried. And now there is. So thank you everybody for listening. And until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest. All right, quick update. We recorded this episode that you just listened to 2 nights ago, and in the intervening time, there's been a couple of updates. Today, Hasbro released an update about the OGL where they kind of walked back the idea that anything that we saw was going to be final, saying that, you know, they they were going to make these changes not for profit, but to, you know, primarily combat racism, you know, and people posting hateful modules. I don't think that's going to fly over too well. I don't think people really believe them. But they got them to postpone at least the changes that they're going to make. Again, it doesn't really affect RPG From Scratch, but it is interesting. And we were considering a version of the Creative Commons license. However, yesterday, Paizo posted an update in response and may actually apply to RPG From Scratch. So this is from Paizo. For the last several weeks, as rumors of Wizards of the Coast's new version of the Open Game license began circulating among publishers and on social media, gamers across the world have been asking what Paizo plans to do in light of concerns regarding Wizards of the Coast's rumored plan to deauthorize the existing OGL 1.0A. We have been awaiting further information, hoping that Wizards would realize that, for more than 20 years, the OGL has been a mutually beneficial license which should not and cannot be revoked. While we continue to await an answer from Wizards, we strongly feel that Paizo can no longer delay making our own feelings about the importance of the OGL a part of the public discussion. We believe that any interpretation that the OGL 1.0 or 1.0A were intended to be revocable or able to be deauthorized is incorrect, and with good reason. We were there. Paizo owner Lisa Stevens and Paizo president Jim Butler were leaders on the Dungeons & Dragons team at Wizards at the time. Brian Lewis, co-founder of Azora Law, the intellectual property law firm that Paizo uses, was the attorney at Wizards who came up with the legal framework for the OGL itself. Paizo has also worked very closely on OGL-related issues with Ryan Dancy, the visionary who conceived the OGL in the first place. Paizo does not believe the OGL 1.0A can be deauthorized ever. While we are prepared to argue that point in court of law, if need be, we don't want to have to do that, and we know that many of our fellow publishers are not in a position to do so. We have no interest whatsoever in Wizards' new OGL. Instead, we have a plan that we believe will irrevocably and unquestionably keep alive the spirit of the open gaming license. So they go on a bit further, talking about what they value as a company, that kind of thing. However, here's the important part. They continue later on, and so we invite gamers from around the world to join us as we begin the next great chapter of open gaming with the release of a new open, perpetual, and irrevocable open RPG creative license, the ORC. Clever of you will have realized that spells orc. The new open RPG creative license will be built system agnostic for independent game publishers under the legal guidance of Azura Law, an intellectual property firm that represents Paizo and several other game publishers. Paizo will pay for this legal work. We invite game publishers worldwide to join us in support of this system agnostic license that allows all games to provide their own unique open rules reference documents that open up their individual game systems to the world. To join in the effort and provide feedback on the drafts of this license, please sign up by using this form, and I'll include the form in the link. This is exciting. If they do a good job, and this is a license that is amenable to our project here at RPG From Scratch, I will keep everybody listening involved in our decision, and any feedback that we want to shoot towards Paizo, you know, if you have any ideas, throw it our way. Or sign up yourself and, you know, give them a piece of your mind. Thank you, everybody, and we appreciate you sticking with us as we navigate this ourselves.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.